Blog Talk Radio.
Michael, the host of your show,
Main Street Universe.
Main Street Universe.
Hello, and I was feeling a little bit musical today. I hope I didn't butcher the songs too much, but I had fun. I will start today's show off, whose topic will be magical animals. I will first start off with a little saying hello to my relatives from this past holiday, who I did get to spend the holiday with. First of all, to my niece, Moira, who received the movie The Dark Crystal, as well as a very cool journal book. To my other niece, Maeve, who received arts and craft supplies, as well as a pretty cool cookbook. And to my nephew, Ox, who received some candies and a Hot Wheels set with a car holder that was like a suitcase, as well as some candy chocolates that I gave him. He's about 3 or 4 that he called poop when he opened it. So there we go. Maeve, Moira, Ox, and of course my little niece, Emma, who was not there. Merry Christmas to you all. I hope you had a great holiday. And I will jump right
in. And Happy New Year, too.
Of course. Happy New Year. Solstice. And all of those things. I would jump into the poetry place section of our show. This poem is published in the Karelian Herald and is also read online here at Main Street Universe. The poem that made it this week was by Reverend Silent Al, and it's called Standing Alone. Standing stately for many moons, greets the dawn with many arms, from blooms unfurl on the stems, with fragrances of early times. Looking through its arms, you see its beauty of many arms. Seasons transition one to another, as the passings of the moon, trees transition from bloom to fruit and barren winter. What has this stately tree witnessed in its time and place? Surroundings change as it ages. Its beauty tests time, so quiet but regal. And that was Reverend Silent Al. Thank you very much for your submission to our Poetry Place promotion that we have here at Main Street Universe. And remember, it is already published in the Karelian Herald. So it is a published poem. Welcome, Kevin Baird, Temple of Gaia.
Thank you, oh great guitar player. That was some excellent stuff you had going there.
Yes, I messed up a riff, but it was fun. I love Rainbow. I love Ritchie Blackmore. Yes. Blackmore's Night.
You play a lot better than I do.
Oh, I haven't heard you play yet before, I believe. Kevin can be reached, remember everybody, Kevin Baird, psychic medium, intuitive consultant at www.templeofgaia.com, as well as at the stores Crystalis in Herndon and Sticks and Stones in Fairfax. Now on to our topic today, magical and very real animals. We will start with the hawk. The hawk is a strong and powerful bird. This bird can be found all over the continent of North America, Central America, and the West Indies. They prefer to dwell in areas such as fields, deserts, with high perched places nearby to keep an eye on their prey. However, these birds can adapt and may be found in mountains and tropical rainforests even. Some hawks are known for their amazing aerial acrobatics. This happens during their mating season. They grab onto each other by the talons and spiral down towards the earth after going a large distance high in the air in a circular motion. Some hawks, such as the red-tailed hawk, are monogamous, keeping only one mate for their entire lives. Now, spiritually speaking, magical and spiritual qualities of the hawk, it is said that the hawk is a messenger, reminding us to pay attention to something. This is a time to be aware. This is a time to wake up. To be visited by a hawk is to be receiving a message from the spiritual realm that one is intended to awaken in the physical world as well. So the message from the great and mighty hawk is one of focus, vision, mindfulness, and some say a warning. The hawk is telling us, now is the time. Not only for you to see clearly what is going on around you, but now is the time for you to step up and take a leadership role. Tap into the degree of mental and spiritual awakeness and intensity that is required to restore balance in certain areas of your life. Hawks are messengers of awareness, focus. They are openers of the higher level chakras. So that's what it means if you see a hawk circling you. It's time to wake up, trust in your internal leadership abilities, step up with this very clear vision, as hawks have really good eyes. It makes them great predators.
And they can see further.
Oh, yes, yes. So that is sort of the totem quality, if you will, of a hawk. My next animal I will mention, and maybe my personal favorite, is cats. There are so many spiritual, religious, superstitious beliefs surrounding cats. I'll just go over a few. In ancient Egypt, the cat was revered as a guardian. The lion, with fire burning in its eyes, would set forth to kill the serpents that could attack Ra during his journey through the dark underworld. You see, Ra was the sun god. Ra would die every night and descend into the underworld in the west, then return to the east and rise again. During this nightly trip through the dark underworld, Ra was at the mercy of potential attacks by serpents, specifically by the three-headed serpent, Apophis, if I'm saying that right. Since cats and lions have eyes that reflect light, it was thought that the lions would look into the setting sun, collect the fire of the sunlight in their eyes, then continue into the darkness, destroying the enemies of Ra. There were many times in ancient Egypt where it would be illegal to the point of you could be executed for accidentally killing a cat. I thought that was kind of an interesting point. Another well-known cat goddess in Egypt is Sekhmet, the female human body with the lioness head. There's Bast, a cat goddess whose gifts were joy and pleasure, perhaps reflecting the independent nature of a cat itself. Sometimes in a consecration ritual by followers of Bast, the arm was cut open and cat's blood was dropped into it. So you're making a blood binding with the feline deity. In Norse traditions, there's the goddess Freya, who would travel on a chariot pulled by giant cats. And in other parts of Europe, cats were seen as companions of witches. In 1233, Pope Gregory IX declared cats to be of the devil. Thus, many cats, and this is a fun point here, or an awful point, however you want to look at it, many cats were executed. One result of the slaughter of these beautiful animals was an increased rat population. This set up the perfect storm for the spreading of the Great Plague, because they made it illegal, saying that these witches' cats were devilish, killed the cats, thus the rats increased, and the plague increased dramatically.
And so a bunch of baby cats are referred to as a kitten, or a kindle.
Ah.
Baby kittens, a group of baby kittens is known as a kindle.
You like think that has some relation to them being burnt or something like that? Like a
kindling
a fire?
Yeah, possibility.
Just a thought. And, by the way, that killing of cats leading to the Great Plague spread is just another example of the incredibly destructive power of bad law.
Right. Blue laws, I guess.
We will now go on to an animal that I think some people in the chat room certainly wanted to talk about. And that animal is unicorns. This legendary animal is one associated with magic and fantasy. Some say the unicorn is a symbol of strength, of freedom, of beauty. During the Renaissance period, the unicorn was known to show up on many tapestries. On these tapestries, usually displayed a beautiful horse with a single horn protruding from its head. Oftentimes, a goatee beard is seen under the horse's chin. Some of the tapestries portray the unicorn as a small horse, small enough almost to fit into the person's lap. There are examples in Renaissance art of these small horses, people petting them in their lap. One is Wild Woman and Unicorn in the 1500-1510 Common Era. Another one, this one was from Rome, is called Virgin and the Unicorn in 1602. In both of these tapestries, the unicorn is smaller and has a goatee beard. And there are in history, of course, many other examples of this. It is safe to assume that most people in the world think that the unicorn is a fantasy animal that never actually or really existed. However, There are those who are convinced that unicorns are and were very, very real. Let us look to some Bible references. We have Psalms 92:10. Here is the verse. But my horn shall thou exalt, like the horn of a unicorn. I will now move on to Numbers 24:8. God brought him forth out of Egypt. He has, as it were, the strength of a unicorn. There are many more examples in the Bible, actually. I have just named a few. So, here's the question, Kevin Baird.
Yes?
Is the uniform a real animal?
Yes.
The unicorn, in fact, is a very real animal.
I can't disprove the unicorn.
However, a man named Oberon Zell Ravenheart, in
right.
1976, after doing much research, Oberon Zell uncovered an ancient secret, a technique, if you will. This technique was discovered from Northern African and Arabic traditions, I believe, for creating unicorns. And in the spring of 1980, the very first unicorn in 400 years was born. Now, this unicorn was not a horse with one horn. This unicorn was a goat, or it was caprine, like you have feline and bovine, a goat, caprine. Notice in the old tapestries, as we mentioned as well, that the unicorns portrayed in them were small with goat-like beards. This is because they were goats, but when they are in unicorn form, especially a certain breed of them, their heads are a little bit longer, and they have the long goatee beard, and one could easily see in a painting it looking like a small horse.
Or a gorse, maybe, cross between
perhaps.
Goat and horse.
I mean, who knows what sort of royal crossbreeding with animals they might have been doing. But Oberon Zell did produce goat unicorns that were real. They weren't like some fake thing plopped on the front of their head, as far as I know. They were real animals. One of the unicorns had a name. His name was Lancelot. He traveled throughout the world with the Barnum and Bailey Circus for a while. So Lancelot
Very
the unicorn
cool.
was known for that. So yes, unicorns are real and true to their artistically portrayed form in these Renaissance tapestries. So I say, really, what an interesting thing for Oberon Zell Ravenheart and his wife, Morning Glory, to have brought into reality. You can find more information on Oberon Zell Ravenheart at www.oberonzell.com. That's www.oberonzell.com.
And if you don't know how to spell it, if you try to Google it, Google has spelled his name so many different ways that they know how to spell it, so don't worry about the spelling.
That's true. It's one of those things. You'll find it. If you just type in unicorns, his name will probably pop up somewhere.
Right.
He is the guy that brought him back into existence. I don't know if he has any more remaining living ones.
Hmm.
I thought I heard somewhere in an interview that he had discontinued growing them for whatever practical reasons, getting older and trying to take care of these things. I don't really know the math behind it. So I bet there's a lot of people that would not believe or understand that it is, in fact, or at least has been, a very real animal.
Right. Let's take just a quick second to say hello to Rune, Guest 2195, James House, Marcy Summers, and I think the name is Sindarin. Looks like a magical name. Welcome everybody to the room, and welcome to Main Street Universe. Main Street Universe is a place to where all people of like minds but unique paths can come and gather in the town square of Main Street Universe.
Absolutely. Now, it just so happens that sometimes my place in that town square is the neighborhood bar. Not this place.
Right.
It was over the weekend. But that was fun. I met some interesting people and definitely did some interesting things.
Yeah, they just shared with me Sindarin. S-I-N-D-A-R.
Sindarin. I would also like to make a plug here. There's a campaign at Witch School International, a site that I often comment on forums, and it's a campaign for video lessons. These guys have put together some great video lessons for studying metaphysical things, and they're trying to put together some new, slightly more modern, better ones. And if you go to www.witchschoolinternational.com, it's a great metaphysical online school, and go to one of Reverend Don Lewis, who's the chancellor of the Karelian tradition. He has daily video logs. Go to one of those daily video logs. It'll take you to the Indiegogo site where you can make donations that are needed to help make these better video lessons. So it's witchschoolinternational.com. Go to a video log, donate to this. These guys are great teachers. He himself is a very charismatic teacher, like Oberon Zell is, who I've heard on the radio before as well. And Selena Fox. I ended up talking a little bit to Selena Fox last night.
Awesome. And Rune is a part of that group too, right?
Yes, Rune is a co-host to a show called The Young Witches of Salem.
And Rune's on the line with us too, by the way.
Oh, are you on the phone?
Rune, hello.
I've been on the phone? Oh,
I hear. I didn't know if you were on the phone. We knew you were in the chat room.
I've been on the phone the whole time.
Oh, great. And thank you for joining us today here at Main Street Universe.
Good thing I've been quiet.
Yes, hey, we're learning, you know, bouncing between the three of us. And one time I think there was four or five, and especially me, because people know I'm fairly talkative, and pausing and taking notes,
yep.
Letting people talk. I will now bring up another spirit animal and the last one that I have prepared. And from there we can let the conversation take on a free form. This one is, we met a very nice girl at the local incense shop here, Sticks and Stones, yesterday, who was wearing a very cool bear hat.
Coda was her name. K-O-T-O.
Coda.
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 Right. Yeah.
And Coda had this great hat, and it made me think, okay, we'll do bears. And so the bear represents, in spirituality, they're sort of the physical representation of the power of patience, strength, calmness, and practicality, and long-sightedness, the ability to look at the big picture. They can in some way show or teach us the positive aspects of the waning side of the moon, the regrouping, the hibernation, the being patient, staying strong, staying focused on the long-term goal. A bear is as well an omnivore. However, for how big this animal is, you might be surprised how very little meat that a bear actually eats. It eats little grubs and some small fish and other things. Not as much as you might think for the large, strong animal that it is. So a bear does represent patience, long-term vision, calmness, strength, regrouping, all of those things, practicality, a very solid, earthy wisdom that comes from the bear, sort of the quiet wisdom.
It can also be very loud and forceful when it's time for you to back off from what you're doing.
Yes. Have you ever encountered a bear in real life up there, up north?
I have seen a bear from the height of a ski lift, but not closer than I'd want to be.
When I was in Shenandoah, I was 6 feet from a bear once. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Rune.
My parents had been in front of a bear once, but real close. My dad actually got a picture of it, and they managed to survive the encounter, but then they found out there was no film in the camera.
Oh, God. So they didn't even get it. I've seen them in person on trails, but I've seen them very quickly, like little black bears, just sort of scamper away. They're usually somewhat nervous around people. It's when they get really hungry or desperate is when they can become a problem. I mean, they're extremely strong. You're not gonna out muscle it or anything. But they'll usually kind of on the hike and trail, they'll kind of scamper away. You might see a little black bear, and he'll disappear and roll off.
I came upon once hiking in the Shenandoahs where it was up a tree already and was shaking the dickens out of it. The leaves were falling down all around us and everything.
Yes.
And I told my friend, it's like, it looks like we should leave, and that we just kept walking. But, yeah, they can be surprising.
So this will bring me to another topic. The Horizon Oracle deck, Kevin Baird.
Right.
I was going to bring this up because we've mentioned it on the show, and I don't want people to think that I'm mentioning something just like it's a sort of a cold plug or a cold advertisement. The Horizon Oracle is a deck being created and is created by Kevin Baird, and he's very passionate about it. I've seen his work. I've seen him working on it. And I think it's a very interesting deck, and I love the idea of someone creating their own divination system, and even series of systems. You kind of got little branches with this thing coming off. And I would like to describe a little bit about your Horizon Oracle deck.
All right, sure.
It's very simple black and white pictures. They're sort of stick figure drawings, so they look extremely modern. And the idea behind this, I guess, were you just thinking simplicity, or were you thinking you wanted something that looked less spooky, I guess? I think we mentioned that once before on the show.
It's really to convey a point and not really, like, it's black and white, and the stick figures and the scenery is all penned. There's no fleshing out of, like, they're wearing some kind of special paisley robe with, like, green garland and some kind of magical crystals and that kind of stuff all around them. These are just scenes on these cards that depict a condition or a notion about life that could be afoot coming up for you,
mm-hmm.
or coming up for the reader, or about the message for the people in the group.
And the symbolism is very modern, I noticed.
Yes, it's like current era kind of things that you would see on the road or you would happen upon in conversation with people.
Yes, because I've noticed there's a lot of roadways. I think there's one of a guy picking up a machine part of different types.
Right, a loose gear. It's about the size of a hubcap.
And it sounds funny at first to someone, especially to someone who's maybe an experienced tarot reader, might look at it and go, what is this? But after you kind of put the cards together, it becomes like a little game figuring them out, and it starts to become like we were looking at it last night at the shop, and
right.
I thought it was kind of fun piecing these things together and trying to figure out what they were. So for some practitioners, they might like the more traditional-looking symbology.
Three of Swords or Five of Wands.
And this is almost like, it's kind of put together like a modern game. And I love how you had it wrapped. You read it on a sushi roll, like a bamboo sushi roll is the little thing you roll out.
Bamboo mat.
And then you put the cards on there. And I thought that was kind of pretty cool as well. Has its own little home there. I use a black cloth. Go ahead, Rune.
Yeah. I've noticed that a lot of more people are starting to do their own oracle decks. I think we're just hitting the next stage of divination and getting away from the brighter white symbols, and they have done such a great help for people. But I think we're just hitting that point that we're starting to realize it's more intuition than the actual medium.
We're hitting
an
evolution.
And so making
evolution.
Your own deck is going further, you know?
Yes. Yep, being outside of the box, really, like old school is done school, basically.
But me personally, I still love the old decks, and I love the old system, but I enjoy the new ones, too. And I enjoy the idea that you're creating one, and that people are creating their own oracles. I still like the old school stuff, though. I have a Rider-Waite Radiant, as one we've used on the show before.
Right. Good. Yep, it's just a deck to help people. It's really images in lay terms. Like a lot of people, whenever they get a tarot deck for their birthday or some special occasion, they open it up and they have no idea what the images mean.
Mm-hmm.
With my images, my symbols, a lay person who wants to start doing something that has to do with metaphysical or, like psychic communication, that kind of thing, or just being able to see into your future a little bit, that's what this design is for. It's designed in lay terms or lay images that anybody can interpret.
Do you have your deck with you?
I don't.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah.
I was going to say, James brings up a good point. Can we get this deck and where?
It's going to be available. I'm working on a second edition, or a second revision, basically. It's going from 89 cards to 120 cards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be available through Sticks and Stones and through Chrysalis, and also through off my website, Temple of Gaia. But right now, only the book for the old version is available, and that's off of Lulu.com. You can go to my website, which is templeofgaia.com, G-A-I-A, and you can see where the reference is about the On the Horizon Oracle. I've also renamed it to just the Horizon Oracle as well, just to keep it simple.
Okay.
That's where the roadway comes in, and the mountains in the distance. It's what you see that's in the horizon that's coming up for you. That's why I called it the Horizon Oracle. It gives you a depiction of the things that you can expect to see.
Okay. And quickly, I wanted to ask.
Right.
So
we have 30 minutes left, roughly.
Okay. So www.templeofgaia.com. Is the deck for sale on at that site?
Not yet.
Okay. No. Okay.
Yeah.
But it will be soon. You're finishing it up. You're wrapping
it
up. I saw you working on it last night. It looked like you're really close.
Yeah.
It's
going to have a companion booklet to go with it as well. The first edition did not have a companion booklet. It just had the cards, roughly, and the big book to go with it. But that was like the first genesis of the Horizon Oracle. And since I started reading with those images, all kinds of new information has come through. These images that go into this deck are images that I have received over the years of reading, that I decided to take those images that were composed or created based on three or four of the Rider-Waite coming together. I took those images and put them into a card to sort of like create the next evolution of divination from my perspective, basically.
Yes. And for those of you out there that aren't that familiar with Kevin, he knows the old decks, too. He read his Rider-Waite for years and other ones. You know which one I've kind of liked?
What's
just
that?
On a side note.
Sure.
I've been a little bit drawn to the Golden Dawn one recently. I like some of the crystal images in it. I'm big into crystals, and there's like one with a crystal chair, and just a thought. Just
cool.
Something to buy.
Awesome.
But if you ever need any help or an idea for a Horizon Oracle.
Right.
Did I say Verizon? Horizon. don't give Verizon
it's
anything.
It's like a cable access for the spirit, basically.
Yeah.
So I guess Verizon sort of works too.
We could have one
Horizon would be Verizon.
Can we get one special Sparrow card so that I'm represented in there somewhere?
Sure. Yes. I may have one already.
It could mean you're going to have a talk show. That's what it could mean.
Yep. I would say that it's the one that is about recognition.
Oh, you do have a little bird in there?
No, it's not a bird. It's a character that is standing on a pedestal.
Oh, okay. Yes, I think I remember seeing that one.
Yeah.
I do remember seeing that one. And
a modest pedestal.
Ah, gotcha. Rune.
Yes.
You mentioned you know some other folks that are also taking to building their own Oracle decks as well.
Mm-hmm. There are a few. Some of the more well-known psychics out there that do their radio are starting to make their own decks.
Mm-hmm.
I know a couple people that are actually outright drawing every single individual little card on cardstock and making their own Oracle deck.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I don't have that artistic ability. I fail at stick figures.
I'm the same way. I don't draw.
Actually, admittedly, now that I think of it, I should make the stick figure tarot.
Go for it.
Yeah.
But,
just make it a tarot for someone that can't draw.
How I started
you
out was I went and I got one of those little drawing books, you know, the ones that are like 3x5, but they have a spine, and I just started capturing the images as they came to me in my day-to-day activities. And that turned into my deck.
Very cool. But I think it's like, just as I was saying, I think we're just moving on to that next level.
Yes.
As a community.
I agree, and I think that also that's all part of being a good metaphysical practitioner. It's one of the things I like about the various different paths that I've chosen, whether it's been eclectic, whether it's been the Karelian nativist tradition, is there's an encouragement, there's an encouraging to take things beyond where you found them. And those are the styles and the systems, just like Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do that he created, mm-hmm. take it past where you found it. Take
right.
it. The tradition was great, it's awesome, and then it's your job to put your mark on it and to improve it for yourself. And that's the way I view spirituality, and that's the way I view practice, that's the way I view music, is the way I view how somebody should approach life.
And there also is something to be said for those people who inspire other people to take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Like the people who have volumes of content in their head that is available for the people who are looking to cultivate something, and the people can know it all, really, without it being a derogatory kind of labeling, can help inspire the people who have the creative abilities but not the references in their head to go further.
And that makes me think of the idea of what a good teacher is, of
right.
what a good mentor is.
Mm-hmm.
Is not only someone that shows you the nuts and bolts of what to do, but someone that teaches you how to think, and that teaches you critical thinking and the thought processes necessary for you to take this to the next level for the modern world. And that's a good teacher.
Yeah, to introduce you to a thinking process that you never pondered or considered before, and applying that process to your creative ability, or combining it with your creative ability, will take you like to a new level. What I do for some of my clients when they're struggling with how they access their creativity or their spirit guide or whatever, I invite them to create a personification of a spirit guide by combining their intuition and their creativity together. And by doing that, they can start manifesting things that are to their heart's desires that don't exist out on the planet. And surprising to them, they discover that other people like the same things that they have come up with as well. And this is what Arun was talking about, how people are starting to connect to a second level of divination, of access to the divine, of creativity. We really need that to be able to take the planet to a new level, because it's in a big SHIT bag right now, and that it's up to the creative forces that are, cultivating this new view of the universe to come up with a solution that can take us to, like, the next level, if you see what I'm saying.
Yes. And that makes me think of just what you were talking about.
Right.
The ability to make those things happen from not real to real. I mean, what a great example we just used earlier of Oberon Zell.
Right.
He's like, darn it, I'm going to find some unicorns.
He is a master artist.
And he made unicorns. That's pretty amazing. It shows you what
yes.
the power of proper thought and education is. And I think education should be so much more respected than it is, even though I think all that's getting better. I think I came from a generation where people, being 40, a lot of people were, keeping it real and all this nonsense, and not respecting folks for reading and learning more. I think that's actually changing. I think the younger people, there's so much information coming at them, and they want to be more informed, at least the ones I work with. I work with some very smart and very ambitious young folks in my job. So I think the next generation is kind of getting it right. They got their issues too, but they're getting it a lot more right than the elders
right.
in some ways.
So basically, excuse the analogy, breaking past the placenta of old
yeah.
thinking and really being born into a new age.
Yep. And that'll bring me to a plug.
Right.
Not for any particular reason, but wow. There's a lot of bad jokes I could say from the last like three lines I just said that I'm really holding up. This is a G-rated show, ladies and gentlemen. I would like
of course
to
they are.
Promote, we won't say plug.
It's G based on people's vocabulary.
Sure.
Oh.
There's Esoterica, which survived and is online.
And they rock.
Yes, they were a store, and now they're not brick-and-mortar store, but they are online. www.esotericanova.com. OTERICANOVA.com. Esoterica Nova. Still your new age interfaith focus. Herbs, crystals, stones, oils, candles, incense, divination tools, and more. Or you can call them at 703-777-4642. And another friendly plug, again, Kevin Baird reads his Horizon Oracle deck at a store called Crystalis. Crystalis is in Herndon, Virginia, but they have a website as well, www.crystalis.com, CRYSTALIS.com. So they have a number as well, 703-689-0114. So Kevin reads there, and he as well reads at Sticks and Stones.
Right.
In Fairfax, Virginia.
Just down the street from us.
Mm-hmm. And I was just there last night. And
rainy it was.
It was. It was rainy. And I bought something from there. Kevin, what do you see in front of you right now that looks new?
It's the Amethyst Pendulum.
Yes, I bought a pendulum. Speaking of old school divination tools, I bought this one basically Beautiful. Because I thought it was pretty.
Very nice.
And you see, yeah. It is a nice amethyst crystal. And
I wear an amethyst crystal when I read also.
And this one, I tested it out in the store, and it spun more on the hand chakra than any pendulum I have personally ever tried. This thing was really swinging. And the girl, the stone healer girl that's there, I forget her name. Sorry.
Gwendolyn?
Gwendolyn's one of them. Well, anyways, we don't need to say their names. But you know who I'm talking about.
Right.
And she had it on her hand, and she was like, wow, that thing's really spinning.
Yeah, that's it.
And that thing was really spinning. It's very pretty.
Yes.
And when you first get a pendulum, I did just a basic cleansing ritual.
Yeah.
And I did it my way, which was I did it with every element in every direction. So I did a visualization, much like a holy water one, where you say, circle three times over with your hands and say, behold, I exercise this creature of earth, casting out all negativity or impurities that may lie within. And then you picture beams of light, yellow light coming out, clearing it. Then you do it physically with the element. So I have air and incense. I ran it over the air. I dipped it in the water, which is also the element of earth because there's salt in it. So that it's in a sense, holy water. And then take it over a flame and then kind of dry
good,
the water.
Good.
So it's represented cleanliness in the four directions. So that's how I clean my pendulum. And another thing that I'm going to do to finish the job, because I still like to do some of these old school things, is I will take it outside on January 9th, and so it soaks in some moonlight. That is the next full moon, I believe. So it will be this beautiful purple amethyst pendulum will be soaking in the moonlight, drawing it in. And at that point, though it's clean now, at that point it will truly be mine and connected to the moon and to me in spirit. So that is a technique that I like for consecrating, cleaning, and blessing my pendulum.
And we were talking about tools of divination. Cool. I always say that anything that lasts has some merit to it. So the tarot has been around for a while. Astrology has been around for a while. Palmistry has been around for a while.
Yeah, probably my
others.
Weakest one. I'm not really good with the – I don't know as much about the palm reading stuff.
Yes.
But all the other ones, yeah, I've done – I sometimes have done smoke scrying.
Right.
I've definitely done flame scrying before, or I've been called before the fires of Azrael or something.
Tea leaves.
That one, I don't know if I've I don't know if I've ever done a tea leaf one.
Yeah. Interesting. But knowing palmistry is like getting to know the D.C. area. You know, you just have to take one section at a time until you get the whole of the picture.
And are there a lot of, what do they call those things? Those circular...
beltways?
Just know the circular, you pull in and there's a whole bunch of...
roundabouts.
Yeah, all those things.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Absolutely.
there's a lot of those in D.C. Hopefully not too many on your palmistry in D.C. Speaking of D.C., we're downtown D.C., high atop Main Street Universe building downtown.
Right.
The tower.
60609.
At Cafe Fairfax Studios. That's not really true. We don't have our own building here for the show. I think you all figured that out.
I do want to take
we don't have to do a lot of overhead.
Thank
you. Were going to say
everyone
something
in the chat room. Because we've had some really interesting conversations today.
Yeah, let's
and if you're not
the chat
room, you're missing half the show. I've been pacing around the room in two different states. Also, we've brought up some interesting things from the animals. We've talked about crows. We've talked about,
yes.
I believe, griffins came up at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been a very, very interesting night in the morning in the chat room.
Yes, that's great. And Kevin is keeping track of these things. I actually, when I do the show, not always, but sometimes I pace around. I walk around. I'm a very physical person. And I kind of move around a lot. But you mentioned griffins and crows. I kind of had a funny crow story that I think I shared on a forum once. Well, I was walking down the street, and it was on this little path, this little side path, and these couple of crows were in a tree that had like little apples in it, and it was throwing little apples in front of me. And it was making me think, is this a warning not to go this way? That's how I took it.
Right.
So I turned around and went the other way. Don't really know, but this crow was, like, messing with me and kept throwing these little apples right in front of where I was about to walk.
I had a crow throw a bone at me, a rib bone from the local restaurant that I had picked up.
They do like to mess with you a little bit. But crows have lots of mythology with them. There's the old saying of, there's like, one crow means, I forget what the meanings were. I knew it at one time. Mm-hmm. I think six meant death was coming, and there was certain numbers of crows that were good and bad luck if you saw a certain number together.
Yeah. I had a pet, you were talking about hawks earlier, I had a pet hawk as a kid when I was about 8 or 9 years old. I had somehow befriended it. It had ran into a building or ran into a tree or did something to where it sort of like disjointed its wing from what my parents were telling me. But what I had done was I tried to take it with me, so I grabbed its wing just to see how it was or what state it was in or whatever. And I guess pulling on the wing sort of like reset the wing and like put it back into the socket maybe or something. Well, the hawk stayed around, so I started feeding it bacon and other things. And it stayed around for like two summers. The first summer just feeding it bacon, it would soar up in the air and then come down, land on the water gutter, and then down onto like the little bench in front of the house. And that's where I would feed it bacon. The neighbors would always pull their kids into the houses whenever the hawk was around for some reason. But my family always talks about that on the holidays, where it's like, remember that pet hawk that you had as a kid? But this was a totally wild animal that I just somehow had rescued by, you know, trying to pull on its wing to see what was going on with it and reset it, and it became my friend. But after that, I guess he grew up. It might have been a young hawk or something, I don't know, but the memory of it stays with me.
And I see Green Gate has joined us.
Yes. Yep. Let's see.
It looks like we have another caller.
Yeah.
Let's check it out. Green Gate, by the way, is from...
Caller 703, area code. How are you?
Hey, Dan.
Who's this?
This is Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, what's happening, Bill?
Hey,
this is Kevin talking, and
that's talking about magic animals, huh?
Magic and real. Magic and real.
All right, yeah. Okay. I got one for you.
Okay, I'm scared, but go ahead.
Hyena.
A hyena.
All right. Hyena. Long thought to be hermaphroditic by the tribesmen and everything.
Ooh.
But the reality is the women's stuff extends like is longer than the man's junk.
Oh,
wow.
And so they have a lot of problems doing it, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, right. So the way it works is, if you think of like the way you'd normally see it pointing, that's the way the woman's pointing, and the guy's got to point the other direction. So they have... They have problems with that. Also, the women are like really aggressive, and there's alpha females. The males are kind of like passive, and women pass on this the androgens to their babies, making them alphas. But it damages their ovaries. So that basically, women hyenas rule, but they have trouble conceiving.
Oh.
And with a 7-inch junk, they outdo the males. You know, so this is perhaps a metaphor for what our society would be like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I understand. Right. No, and by the way, Bill, and thank you very much for calling today. And Bill, everybody out there, is actually a very, very good poet in his own right. I know him in real life. Well, this is real life too, right? And feel free sometime, Bill, to, you know, have a poem prepared. We actually have a little poetry place segment on our show where we read a poem from the publication from my tradition. But feel free to call in, read a poem sometime. I know he's great with words and very educated.
Well,
knowledge.
I take issue with, I think you didn't say it. It was your, I think Kevin said, you know, or something. If something's been around for a long time, then, you know, blah, blah, blah. There must be something to it. Well, a lot of animals are being hunted to extinction because it's been around for a long time that, like, powdered rhinoceros horn and tiger whatever.
I mean,
and these have been around for a long time, and basically, I guess, Chinese men think these are like Viagra or something. And the fact is they're not. But
that's also,
in the meantime, a lot of these animals are being driven to extinction because of these people's stupid superstitions.
Well, the point is, we were talking a little more specifically about if a system of divination seems to work for the person. Not every superstitious practice that someone would
attach
to an animal.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I mean, if the test of truth is that something's been around for a long time, then, you know, human sacrifice would like qualify. You know, necromancy, or
human sacrifice is taking place right now, but in metaphor, where corporations
and for real
corporations are sacrificing their employees.
Well,
to the wind.
I don't disagree with that. I'm simply saying that it doesn't do any good.
Right.
It doesn't bring. It doesn't make the rain fall or the crops grow.
I know your point you're making. You're saying
the point is that because something's ancient, doesn't make it right or true or anything like that. It just makes it old. And generally, if we look back to the Neolithic period for guidance, I think we're going to get in trouble.
Well, the point we were making was about if a technique works for you and has worked for people over time. Like I said, not referring to every animal superstition. Yeah, I think the idea of using an aphrodisiac, it doesn't work out of the horn of this or that.
And there are some methods that are flawed, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've got like Viagra now, and we did that through, like, I think it's called, science? And it actually works. Not that I've ever personally experimented with this, but I hear from, you know, like a lot of places that it does work, whereas the reindeer horn and everything, the rhinoceros horn doesn't. So
there's also horny goat weed was very popular for that too, and still is. This comes from Mexico. That's helpful with that, but I digress.
Well, I'm not sure saying that a biological might not have some effect, but I'm saying that just because something's ancient doesn't make it. It's not a good test of truth. And
so
ancient
for the people that are in the room that are doing that, that are sacrificing the rhinoceros' horns for their development or growth, stop doing that.
Yes, well, the problem with such things is that when you subject them to a truth test, the people still don't believe you.
Right.
Imagine if they got it to work in their mind, maybe something could have somewhat of a placebo effect as well.
I just finished an interesting book on that. It's called Redirect, and I would recommend it to anybody, but it goes through a lot of these things that like the Scared Straight program for prisons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking kids in and scaring them about prison is going to make them kids at risk better citizens, right? maybe try to avoid prison. They subjected that to a test after like 20 to 30 years, found out that it was turning them into criminals. Nobody had ever tested.
We would have to blame Dr. Spock for that.
It wasn't Dr. Spock. It was a bunch of, inmates and prison guards in some place in New Jersey, and it sounded very reasonable. But when you followed 50,000 kids over a period of 30 years, you found that you've just made 6,000 criminals beyond what the kids would have normally produced.
They imprinted it upon them at the impressionable age, which was a mistake. Well, so I guess
this was actually the reason it failed was a different reason. But the point that the guy was making is that you should actually experiment and test these things to make sure that they're right. Like
absolutely. I think programs like that are ridiculous, personally.
It's like real-time testing.
For instance, sending kids that like get busted for pot when they're 15 to Narcotics Anonymous, it sounds reasonable. Or maybe to some people it sounds reasonable.
To some people it does. I think it's ridiculous.
Right.
But you're putting kids in with hard drug users. Really good idea.
Yeah.
And the effect of that is probably not going to be what you want it to be.
And that's, I think the pagan community can help them in a sense to where they can help those people who are off a positive path onto a better kind of path. They just need to have the right exposure to like the right elements that are out there. Maybe getting away from having both parents working in a 9-to-5 kind of world, and that the child is set loose upon the world. Maybe one of the parents needs to be back home again and in control.
Well, that would be
of
something else that you could
child as well.
And in general,
that's something else.
Go ahead.
That's actually starting to happen, but it's mostly at this time, it's mostly the fathers that are staying home.
I don't know.
Now, a lot of that is because of the unemployment, but it's just interesting to see how it completely seems to be shifting.
I'm not sure that the original premise is true, because I haven't seen any good data to tell me one way or the other.
But we got 3 minutes left in the show, and we start out with talking about the magical properties that are associated
Tasmanian
with
Devil. Tasmanian Devil.
Right. And
toughest bite.
Also
toughest
about the hyena. The
for weight of any animal. Any mammal.
And the totems.
Right.
Like, and the Alaskan, I think they are the Inuit Indians had totem poles that had animal associations, and that I see it as that they saw each animal as being a tribe representation of some kind of element that's a part of the planet and part of the universe as well. So you had the fox tribe, you had the hawk tribe, all those different tribes, like we have our tribes where you have artisan tribes, you have singer tribes, you have farmer tribes, you have child-rearing tribes, you have the people who are good at caring for others who need help, you know, like the doctor tribes, that kind of stuff. I ask you, what tribe do you belong to? We saw here what the hawk means and what the unicorn means. Who are you? Are you the unicorn or are you the hawk? You know, it's time to represent your tribe.
Those are Pacific Coast. Those are not Inuit. Those are Pacific Coast.
Okay. Well, thanks for that.
They're not Inuit. They're like Washington, Oregon, British Columbia.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for that. But it just was general area people that are associated of that group. I always rely on the well-read people in my life to help me stay connected to the right information. But we're at 30 seconds left, people. Daniel, you want to...
Thank you for everybody for joining us. Thank you, Rune. And Green Gate and Bill and everybody else in the chat room. And remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I don't know about you, but I can imagine a lot. And, of course, we're going to have many different opinions and positions here on Main Street Universe.
Right.
Thank you all very much.
Thanks for everybody in the room that came in and shared your questions and information.
And blessed be.